it was so tricky. Because so she says that she posted there are three branches of government and your church is not one of them.
Oh. And,
right. So I responded and I was like, look, I guess this post is about abortion. I said, you know, the thing is, like, we all agree that murder is wrong. And scientifically, we know that from the moment of conception, this is a unique human life. Because it grows and changes. It will have, if not interrupted, the ability to reproduce and beget more life. And we know it's human because it, right. Yeah. It has two human parents. So we know it's human. Like, we understand this is human life. I said, the real issue we're all debating here is when personhood is given to this human life. When is it a recognized person with all the rights that affords? And I pointed out, I said, you know, it's super tricky for me because to say something like cognitive ability, like it doesn't have the ability to think or doesn't think very well, or physical capability, it doesn't feel anything or it can't perform work. These are slippery slopes to me that lead to eugenics, which is, you know, a Nazi era program.
Yeah. And when you say that word, when you use that word, you sound like a tinfoil hat, you know, and that's not really what it is, though, so, you know.
Well, what's wild to me is that when I said that, she called me a Nazi and told me I should be ashamed for pointing out that that medical doctors, if your child has the marker for Down syndrome, literally every doctor and nurse from that point out will pressure you into getting an elective abortion just so that you don't have a child with Down syndrome. I point out that that's some Nazi era eugenics BS, and I get called a Nazi, and I don't understand. I don't understand
it's the go-to. You're either, you know, you're always going to be some kind of fascist if you're telling somebody no. That's essentially what it's become. If you tell somebody no, you're a fascist, which is very low level thinking. I mean, in my opinion, you know, I want to have it explained a little further. How is my no affecting you? And it may be affecting you, but let's explore and investigate what about my no, why it's affecting you. What is it doing? What am I telling you not to do? What am I asking you? Because I have no power to make anybody stop doing anything. I just share my opinion.
Right.
You know.
Well, and also we're doing this weird thing, I notice culturally, where we're attempting to like separate sex and pregnancy. Where it's like they're two different things. But you weren't walking down the street and tripped and landed in some dirty water and got pregnant. You didn't get stuck with a dirty needle. Right. You didn't get stuck with a dirty needle by a homeless guy and got pregnant. You know what I mean? Like it's not.
It's, we know how it happens.
Yeah. I understand people want to talk about other, you know, incest, rape, etc. People always want to bring that up, and never mind the minuscule accounting for actual abortions that covers, and the fact clinics help hide predators. Yeah, and never mind all of that. Like, the point of sex is to get pregnant. I don't know.
It's what kind of boggles my mind about that whole issue, and this is going to go in a little bit of a probably not very LCMS or where, you know, area, but what kind of boggles my mind about that is if you go from a purely evolutionary natural selection direction with that, the whole reason, you know, their argument is going to be that it's all about pleasure and it should never be about that. And the problem is there's, from their point of view, which is a non-Christian point of view, non-creation, non-Christian, not anything. And I understand different denominations have different views of creation in and of itself. I'm not even going to get into that. But The whole point is, though, that the whole what their pleasure that they're looking for is, in an evolutionary sense, would have been a tool that natural selection kind of created so that we would continue having more babies. You know, mm-hmm. that it was the incentive. It was, I'm saying from their point of view, it just makes no sense. The whole reason that, you know, natural selection would have created a situation, or, you know, we would have naturally selected to have this pure pleasure out of it, is because the people who were finding that happening were having more babies because they were doing that more often. You know what I mean? Right. It makes no sense to me. They've completely separated everything to the point where even if you remove religion out of it, it just makes no sense to me at all. You know,
how do you,
that was the non LCMS version of that conversation.
It's fine. I'm not in the LCMS anyway, so.
I know you guys were, but I was trying to keep it, you know, rated G, but, you know, it just, that has never made any sense to me. So that whole aspect of it never made any sense.
So I tried the Equal Rights Institute. Let's be fair and reasonable, and let's talk about this like adults kind of approach.
Yeah.
But I found with my friend that she just doesn't want to be reasonable. Right?
Yeah.
It's at the end of the day, no matter what, she literally in her, because I replied to her and pointed out, like, hey, you never actually dealt with my actual argument, which was, when do we assign personhood to this thing? And she never actually responded to that. She wrote a book, and at the end of the book, she capped it off with, but at the end of the day, you're a straight white male without a uterus, so it doesn't matter, like, what you think. So, like, how do you, if someone just doesn't want to discuss the issue, like, how are you supposed to discuss this reasonably with people when they just refuse to be reasonable?
Well, sometimes you do have to shake the dust off your sandals and walk away from it. You know, that's, you know, you have to be, you're not always going to be successful talking about this. Sometimes you present your position without responding to somebody else's position. You know, you just throw it out there. You share the things that you, the arguments and the discussions that you have, without responding to somebody else's, posts. I have a number of friends who are very pro-choice, very, very pro-choice. And we share our items on Facebook and we don't respond to each other's posts. And I think that, I hope that when I'm sharing those things, I mean, I've shared pictures at the March for Life, speaking engagements and things where friends of mine who are very pro-choice have liked the pictures. I literally have a picture that's labeled, this is me turning everybody into handmaidens. And my absolute most pro-choice friend liked the picture. Because I don't, I think I don't challenge her beliefs directly. I just share mine. And she sees that as acceptable because it's, we're just both speaking our truths. Now I have a friend that I was speaking to yesterday about this, who's very pro-life, who ended up, a friend of hers who was very close had ended a friendship over the Roe decision because, I will say I live in New York and it's obviously very progressive here. And I find that the people who tolerated me before this happened have become exceptionally intolerant in a very short period of time. I've had people screaming at me at my job that my religion was taking away the rights. The person in question has two daughters. That my religion was taking away his daughter's rights. And it was just shocking because I had always been very open about this. I kind of felt like the pro-life thing was actually a very safe, controversial subject to talk about because we had the law and it was always more of a philosophical argument between people. It's suddenly now it's not philosophical anymore. So I think like with my friend that I was speaking to last night, and then this person, and maybe your friend too, something that they just assumed was always just going to be a discussion and something people talked about has come to fruition for them, and they were not expecting it. And it's just, it's, I think they are shocked right now. I think they're in a state of shock. You know, and so I don't think there's really a lot you can say to that directly.
From the time of the leaked opinion to the time of Roe actually being overturned, in that space of time, I read a book called Overruled, and it was about Obergefell and same-sex marriage. And I'll link it in the description. It has some good arguments. Like, no one ever considers the right of a child to be raised by both a mother and a father, things like that. It has some good arguments about what is the purpose of marriage, and that is rearing children. And if your union can't rear children, then, like, is it a marriage? And he goes into people who are involuntarily sterile and things like that. And he does explore those things. But one of the things he pointed out early on in the book was that gay marriage is such a heated issue and such a contentious one that people can't even talk about it. And the comparison he used was abortion. And he said, look at how civil everybody is with abortion. And he wrote the book in 2017 or something like that. And I'm sitting here in 2022 in between the leaked draft and the, yeah. And that's what I was thinking. I was like, man, that's a dated example.
Yeah. Not civil anymore.
There's nothing civil about it.
Yeah.
I've had people, coworkers and people that I thought were legitimately good friends of mine,
normal,
not speak to me anymore over this.
Yeah. I am anticipating between this and some gender issues that I will not last more than I cannot say. I work for a very large, very progressive company, and I anticipate that within the space of a year, maybe, hopefully, maybe. I mean, I would like to stay longer. I'm really not in a position to lose this job, but I can't pretend, you know. I can't pretend certain things, and it is causing some strife at work. So,
I work for the government, so I'm expecting to lose my job here pretty soon too.
Yeah, and it's how fun, right? Because I'm assuming your job, your family relies on your job for your benefits and the other things that you you know, you've come to rely on an employer for, you know, which is part of the whole problem. That's part of a whole other issue that's, you know, I think that it's true that abortion could be spoken of very civilly because, like I said, it was a philosophical concept, whether you were pro-life or pro-choice. It wasn't really relevant in the big picture. Now, here in, I'm in New York, it's still not relevant. The people that I see that are really upset and really agitated are mostly my friends or the people that I know who get most of their political news from memes. So they're outraged, but they're outraged for people in Alabama because nobody in New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey is losing any of their right to reproductive health and abortion or anything. Nobody here is losing anything. I wish that we could kind of do like prisoner exchanges with somewhere that was different. So all the people who want to have them, you know, I could go, I will trade places with somebody elsewhere and they can come take my family's place and we could just trade places, you know, because you're not losing anything here, you know. I'm the one who's losing here, not you.
I saw a meme at the right when the decision was released, and it was this dude on Twitter, and he was like, the biggest irony here is that Democrats in Democrat states or Democrats will burn down Democrat cities in Democrat states where absolutely nothing has changed about abortion.
Yeah. They were in New York City. There were, yes, in New York City, they were like interrupting. I can't remember what it was, but they interrupted a speech, a politician's speech or something. I can't remember, right in the beginning. And I was like, it was women. And they were just like, I'm like, are you really, really? Like, why are we doing this here? Like, you guys got it all here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why? I should be the one, you know, interrupting things here. I should be the one going, and I have. It was quite shocking to the system of my small little area, because I was the youngest person on the side of the pro-life side in the events. The events that I go to are generally me and a number of Catholic people who are over the age of 55 or 60. I should say 60 because my husband's 55 and they were significantly older than him. So I am generally the youngest person at any kind of pro-life protest in my area. I bring my daughter if I think they're going to be peaceful. So yeah.
You know what really shocked me about the whole thing? It was if you're really pro-life, you would care about these women when they're pregnant and when they're giving birth and after birth when they need all this care and all this. And it's like, well, we pointed out we have pregnancy crisis centers, and like just today, they're firebombing them. Yeah. Just today, I saw Elizabeth Warren call pregnancy crisis centers terrorist institutions that are holding women hostage and torturing them. Those are her exact words. And then, go ahead.
No, there was actually a story that went around. It was a doctor, I believe her name's Anne Adante, and I could be pronouncing that wrong. I had actually written, I shared a post today on Twitter from Live Action News that they published for me. And she had posted a while back, about a year and a half ago, a story. She's a gynecologist, abortionist, and she had written a story, a Twitter story, and it was, I think I counted out the characters. It was like, you know, 5,000 words long altogether in this whole tweet thread about how a client of hers who came to her for an abortion had been essentially, and I would assume legally speaking, had been kidnapped by a pregnancy resource center. She had walked in thinking it was a clinic, and she was held hostage, essentially forced to discuss the pregnancy with them. She was forced to look at an ultrasound. They kept calling her mommy. They kept, you know, and I'm just like, if you know, there's been a couple articles written about this Twitter thread, because people on the pro-life side are like, if you know where this place is, you need to call, we will help you call the police, because that's kidnapping and you can't.
Yeah.
And there's never been any response on her part as to where this place was, what it, you know, who the people were, which you would think that they would want people to know about this place, and they would want to warn them not to be involved with this place, but nobody's ever answered. And those are the stories that you hear on the news. You hear about the Washington, that girl in Texas that the Washington Post shared the story about, where they really made it sound like the woman, the pregnancy resource center had tricked this girl into delivering her twin babies. And the way they described it was ridiculous. It was, you know, essentially they lulled her into delivering twins with throw pillows and watercolors in their waiting room. You know, it was just like, you know, like this. And, you know, maybe, you know, I mean, I don't know. I would think that maybe anybody who's already going into a pregnancy resource center and doesn't leave immediately may already be on the fence about terminating a pregnancy. And the most you could say about them manipulating would be that maybe they're helping them to solidify their decision one way or the other. you know, and even that, that's a real stretch, but I'm like trying to, I always try to see other people's viewpoints and what they're trying to say and, you know, look at it from their perspective, because I feel like if I look at it from their perspective, I can answer their fears. But it's just like they give you diapers and baby wipes, you know. They're also characterizing them based on a model that's very much from the 80s. You know, a lot of them were very fundamentalist at that time. You were required to attend church in order to access their services, you know, a lot of things like that. And a lot of them are not like that anymore. They're, you know, they're just care centers, you know. They help you sign up for WIC.
The other
and
thing
give
that really
diapers,
gets me,
you know, nefarious,
right? Yeah, evil. Those evil Christians helping single mothers and the poor
after their babies are born. They were supposed to stop the second those babies popped out. That what's right, happening yeah. here? You know,
damn you!
Yeah, right. The horror.
What gets me is the how rapid the shift is, right? So it's like I have whiplash. I have whiplash from the if you Christians are really pro-life, you would care about them after they're born. Did you know that pregnancy crisis centers outnumber abortion clinics 3-1? Oh wow, well we're gonna firebomb them to change those numbers.
Yeah.
Or if you really cared about babies, you would adopt more. Did you know that Christians actually adopt more babies than any other people group on the entire planet? Because it turns out we do care. And then the immediate, like literally the day that argument became big, if you cared, you would adopt. I remember this, if you cared, you would adopt. And people were just hammering in Christian adoption statistics. And within 12 hours, the narrative shifted to, wow, you must be a bunch of pedophiles if you're adopting kids. And it's just like, you get
the children.
Yeah. How do you deal with this? How are you supposed to talk to people that this is what they do? No matter what you say, you're wrong. How do you deal with that?
Yeah. It's a lot. I think that, you know, they set up for a couple of other weird dynamic shifts within the adoption thing too, in that people like me, like our family, we're not affluent at all. And our children would be the prime targets for, you know, for termination, as that we don't have a lot of money. We don't own a house. We don't, you know, we're a little, less than desirable in our current society as far as our finances. So we would not be eligible to adopt or to foster. Yet our children, you know, we're being told that we're not really pro-life because we're not adopting, but you're not letting the people who are the most affected by abortion, which are families that are less affluent, are the people who are not allowed to adopt children. We're not allowed to foster children. We're not allowed to do all the things that they want us doing in order to be, for it to be acceptable for us to be pro-life. There's a very large segment of the pro-life or the abortion vulnerable population that can't do any of those things, you know, and it's a very insidious kind of argument to me, going back to the eugenics conversation. And that word is such like a bad word kind of thing. You know, it's just such a strange dynamic there, that the people who are the most affected are the ones who are the least able to access those things.
Yeah, so I saw a comedian on the TikTok, and
the TikTok,
that's so great. She was telling this joke about a friend of hers, who was talking about like defund the police, and she was like, "We have to defund the police because they're just out here killing black people without repercussion at all." And she told her friend, she said, "You've had 10 abortions. You've killed more black people than the police." And everyone laughed. They laughed at the joke, but like it was uncomfortable, right? Because
it is uncomfortable because it's, and you know, It's uncomfortable. I try to be cautious. You know, going into the, because it is such a, it is uncomfortable and it's not, you know, it's unspoken of, but I always kind of think, and this is going to seem like it's going off in a different direction, but I just don't understand that whole mentality of anybody, regardless of what your ethnicity is, to thinking that your success is going to come like as a, by ending the lives of your future generations. You know, I think of, you know, Bobby Sands was a Irish revolutionary and he ended up on a hunger strike and died in prison. And one of the things that he had written was, our revenge will be in the laughter of our children. And I've always kind of taken that to heart that, you know, if you really are focused on injustice and you're focused on the things that, you know, people are, you perceive as what people are doing to you or harming you in some way. I think having your children and their success is the only way you're going to combat that injustice. So it's not even whether anything is true or not true or even uncomfortable. It just doesn't make any logical sense to continue down that road to me. It makes no sense. Mm-hmm. If I see children that look like my children being harmed and not having the future that I think that they deserve, I'm going to encourage more of that because I know that's awful and that's going to come up sounding really bad, but I just, that's how I, you know, that's how I feel about that. I don't understand the, you know, that thought process. And it is something we don't want to talk about. Nobody wants to talk about, but I don't know. Yeah.
Is it a clump of cells?
Is it a, I mean, it is in the same way you and I are a clump of cells. You're right. A clump of cells. I'm a clump of cells. We are all clumps of cells, but it is a completely distinct individual human being from the moment that it is created. There is no, you know, you'll see a lot of the eggs. This is not a chicken. I'm going to feed a raw chicken to somebody in a restaurant. That was the newest thing. They're looking for somebody in a DC restaurant to serve a pro-life politician who orders chicken and egg, a raw egg, and say, oh, you right. ordered a chicken.
But this is a chicken. The egg isn't fertilized.
Not fertilized. Yeah, it's not fertilized. So it's not a human being. I mean, it's not a chicken. And, you know, and I think that's, you know, that's the, there's a difference between, you know, gametes and a human being. They're not the same thing. And no, it's not a clump of cells unless you consider us clumps of cells. We are large clumps of cells. Embryos, fetus, blastocyst are very small clumps of cells. It's not a parasite either.
It's not. No. No.
No, it's not a parasite.
I have a friend. Oh, never mind. I can't tell this story. I'll tell it to you after. But safe to say, no, it's not a parasite. So let me ask you, when someone posts a picture of an early gestation, gestational embryo of an elephant, and they say, conservatives, do you think this is a human life? And a conservative replies, yes, I do. And then they say, oh, gotcha, Fundy, it's an elephant, you stupid conservative. Is that really, that's the end, that's, the, I mean, I guess we're pro-choice now, right? Yeah. Like, that's the argument.
They do it all the time. I have seen so many of those that I have become very good at being able to discern what kind of embryo that I'm looking at, not because I have a science degree, but just because I've seen them so many times.
Seen
I'm
enough
like, oh,
memes,
that one's an
man.
Elephant. Oh, there's a dog. There's a dog and an elephant. This one's a chipmunk. That's a clever one. You know, it's like, yeah, only because you've seen them so many times. Yeah, that is a new ish that, and every once in a while you'll still see a burning embryo story too. Those two seem to be, those are like the starter pack for people who are just getting into arguing about abortion. That's their starter pack. Let me ask you this question. Yeah, they're like, Let me ask you this question. What would you do if there was a 3-year-old and burning bucket of embryos? And you're like, I always ask, am I on a space station? Because that would be a big difference. If I'm on a space station and I'm supposed to be repopulating a new planet, I'm going to save the bucket of embryos, obviously. Yeah, yeah. It depends on what my mission is, you know? I'm not going to save the 3-year-old if my mission is to populate a new planet. You know, I'm just like, I don't know. Well, people generally like that answer.
I'll see people, they'll do the same, the trolley problem.
Yeah.
Where they'll say, oh, here you have a 5-year-old that's going to die, but over here you have 100 fetuses laying on this train track. What are you going to save, Fundy? And I'm like, well, if the 100 fetuses are on the train track, they're probably already dead, right? Like,
that is what most people say. I mean, they're not in a cryogenic tube somewhere. Right. I mean,
they're just fetuses laying on a train track.
You know, I'm like, I don't know. You know, it's a lot of those questions are really, you know, people think that they're being very clever, and they're really, even the best questions and the most honest questions that people ask about, you know, the abortion situation, it are questions of autonomy. All these other questions deal with the humanity of the fetus, which, or an embryo, you know, I'm just using fetus, but there are different stages and different names for different stages, obviously. But there's no questioning the humanity of what a human woman is carrying inside of her body. It is what it is, and that's it. It's not a different species, and it's alive. So it's a living human. But unless it's a question of autonomy, they're usually really, really easy to refute, like right off the bat. So more honest pro-choice people will usually concede that it's a human being at this point. The people who are more serious about the arguments will concede that it's a human being, and they move on from that. They don't use those arguments quite
right.
as often.
Well, because the real argument is the conflict of rights issue between the rights of the fetus and the rights of the woman.
Yeah, and there is a conflict there, and those are the more honest conversations that you have. I have, like I said, I have friends who are very exceptionally pro-choice, and, you know, those are the kind of things that when we do talk about it, those are the things that we talk about. Well, what would you do at this point? And the hardest ones are the ones that say, well, I would never do it, but I'm just pro-choice for other people. And I'm like, you're so close. You are so close. So, so close. So close.
So update on the person I talked about in the very beginning that I had this Facebook conversation with. I just went and pulled it up real quick to see if she had replied yet, because I wanted to run her reply by you. And she did not reply. She actually blocked me.
Well,
so
you're done.
I guess we're not actually friends.
How long did you know
this person? Not too long, a year. We were coworkers for a while.
I got blocked by the Elka Pope.
Oh, man. I have been trying to get Bishop Eaton to block me for at least 2 years now. And it just, that's not fair. I did initially.
I have a whole list of him. I was blocked.
Honestly, I would love to have her on the podcast.
You should send a message to her. They're a little
I did.
Creepy,
she never responded.
They're a little creepy. They had, I had one of them. On a different subject, one of them who was a candidate, I believe, for the seminary, or who was in the seminary, and this isn't about abortion, about the trans issue, who ended up talking about something that I said was, I was just talking about having private spaces, and he started sending private messages to a number of males, Lutheran people who were mutual friends of mine on social media, asking them questions about me and what did I mean by my post? Was I transphobic? Like, it was just very strange and very controlling in a sense. I don't like
Sarah. Are you trans? Are you transphobic?
Pardon me. No, I am not
transphobic.
Oh, am I? Well, I'm going to answer this probably a little differently than you believe that I am, and say that yes, I am afraid of men who want to come into my private space claiming that they're women.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's perfect. The male answer is like, no, why would I be afraid of a guy who can't figure out that he's a dude?
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah, there's definitely a fear there. And, it's funny because a lot of people say, are you phobic of all these other things? And I'm like, you're mischaracterizing phobic there. You're using bias in the place of phobic. But no, I was very, until probably about a year ago. And this even hurts me to even say this, because there are people who I desperately love and I care for and I respect exceptionally, who are in that community of people that I held out for a long time not speaking publicly, because I wanted to retain the esteem of those people who have never done anything to me and have never behaved aggressively or done anything. But it became problematic to the point where I started listening to a podcast, another podcast, and somebody who really made me kind of like rethink that whole dynamic of what does polite mean and why I'm not being polite by doing that. I'm just subliminating my thoughts and my, and so I had written, I have a very poorly kept up Substack, and I had written a kind of an open letter about, that. And I do actually have a post that is titled, "Yes, I am transphobic and you made me this way," that I have not published. Wow. Because I don't want to be, I don't want it, the whole Substack, so that's just what it's, I want it to be just like a general, all kinds of working man subject thing. But it is a fear-based, that is a fear-based thing. And it's very closely related to the abortion issue as well, to me, as far as in the ethical foundations of it, is that just, women in, you can definitely make a case, and I would not call myself feminist in any kind of the way, but I do recognize that, our work environments and the things that we're expected to accomplish in this life are much more suited to the way men's bodies work than the way women's bodies work. The time off that you get for a pregnancy after you've delivered a baby is very, very, very short period of time, things like that. And I understand the business. I own a business. I get the dynamics and the financial reasons to it too. So I don't know that there's a good solution to it. You know what I mean? But I view the trans thing the same way. It's just kind of men trying to decide for women what we're going to be and what it means to be woman is problematic for me, the same way that a company expecting its employees to get an abortion so that they can continue climbing up the corporate ladder is problematic to me. Those two things are very closely linked in my mind.
The company abortion thing, the company abortion thing is one that really puzzles me, because Amazon comes out and all these Uber or whoever else, they all come out and say, if you get pregnant, we will pay for you to go to, wherever, Massachusetts, and get an abortion. And it's wild to me that people are praising this. Oh, it's so, look at how generous they are. Generous, they just saved on like 3 or 4 months of maternity leave.
Yeah.
In a lot of the cases of these new tech companies, it's like 6 months of maternity leave.
Yep. They have, I think, just Costco, Starbucks. Yeah. It was Costco, Starbucks, and one other company were the only three that I found that paid for both. Were very generous for the abortion issue, but also very generous for a lengthened period of time for paternity or maternity leave. And it was very, it did not match up in those, except for those, yes, Costco, Starbucks and what was the, I can't recall off the top of my head, but that everybody equally at least those two companies are given full maternity, like for the 6 months, or they can, you know, the vast majority of companies, it's just abortion. That's it. You get that. And then you get your, it's funny too, because people talk about maternity leave in the United States and we talk about ourselves having maternity leave. I don't think people realize what maternity leave, people who don't have children actually realize what maternity leave is in the United States. Maternity leave is you either get 6 weeks or 8 weeks. You get 6 weeks if you have a vaginal delivery, and you get 8 weeks if you have a C-section, because your maternity leave actually isn't your maternity leave. It's recovery time for a medical situation. It's literally,
wow,
essentially workers' comp you're getting your workers' comp. That time is not put aside for bonding with your baby, caring for your baby without having to pay childcare. It's not put aside for the baby. Even our maternity leave is in essence put in place so that we can be healthier when we go back to work. That's it. Because I had full maternity leave after I lost a child. I didn't have to go back to work for 8 weeks because I had the C-section for that. And I have, I know that when you speak to a doctor, if you're starting to feel toward the end of your pregnancy, like you can't do it and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm dying here. And you ask them for time off, because I did that with one of my pregnancies. It was very tough. And I said, can you please just sign me out for maternity leave now? The doctor would not, because he was worried about getting into trouble for insurance fraud, because it's an insurance issue. It's not a beneficial family leave policy. So we don't realize that. Yeah.
So, I am doing the math here real quick. Average. So assuming that you're going from Georgia to New York for an abortion and Amazon's going to pay for it.
Yeah.
Your total flight cost would be $190 for your round trip, and your hotel cost would be $405. So that's $600 is what Amazon would pay for you to go to New York and have an abortion, because I'm assuming the abortion is free. And I'm assuming it would only be a few days. Like, you don't need to be there 8 weeks, right? You just go up to...
No, you don't. Depending on the company, if they give you leave for that kind of thing, some companies do give you bereavement leave. You can use the same type of bereavement leave you use for a miscarriage.
Why would you need that? Why would you need that for a clump of cells?
Well, because everybody's... You know, it's a very difficult choice to make unless you're shouting about it.
Right.
You know, it's like,
so the average cost to go get an abortion in New York, if you live in Georgia and you work for Amazon will pay you $600 to go get an abortion, versus the average cost of maternity leave in Georgia is double that at $1,200. And it's wild that people think these companies are fighting for their rights. They're not. They're fighting for their bottom line.
Yeah. For the most part, it is wild. Well, they need you to get back into that. They need you to get back to that, you know, cubicle or the sales floor or the stock room or wherever it is that you're doing, whatever you're doing for, you know, not usually the people that are going to be availing themselves of that issue too are going to be not the most affluent workers in a company.
No, because here's the thing is the affluent people who can get the back alley abortions, their back alley abortion is going to be performed by the same doctor that still does house call.
Yep. That's what we had a neighbor who was a doctor, who was a retired doctor, and he said, on a personal level, he was definitely against abortion. He felt that it was not good. But he eventually became pro-choice. He was an osteopath in New York City in the 60s. And he said the reason he switched over to like the pro-choice side was because one of the hospitals that he had worked in shortly after he finished his medical degree, they literally had an entire floor of the hospital put aside for people who were terminating pregnancies. And it was all upper middle class Caucasian women. And he ended up, and he said he ended up seeing the results of the poorer women, the immigrant and black women who coming in who were just butchered by doctors. Now, I do need to make a caveat to that. Now, that's generally is not going to happen now because nobody is going to be physically going to, most people aren't going to be going. It's going to be medication abortion that people are having. That's also part of the reason that pro-life laws don't have penalties on them for the woman, so that if there is an emergency, she can go to a hospital and receive medical care and not, we don't have those kind of things. I know that's controversial and people feel very differently about it. I want it to stay illegal, and I think that's the best way to go about it. So
it's wild, dude. The whole thing really, it blows my mind. And so you said something way, way earlier that I think hit the nail on the head. And it's that we were able to discuss this and be civil about this and rational about this because it was mental masturbation. It was a philosophical exercise that has no impact in the real world at any point in time because the law is settled and it's the law. But now here, it's not. It's not. All of a sudden, it's not. And people are losing their minds.
Well, because it's they have insane. To confront. It's a cognitive dissonance. They have to confront what it is that they're... It was very easy for them to not be paying attention to what it was they were actually fighting for. Now they're having to justify their fight.
Why are people so rabid to kill their own children? I don't understand.
I can't tell you my reason because I was told on the internet that not everything is Gnosticism.
It's wild, dude. So I don't know. I had a friend,
but I think it's Gnosticism. Sorry.
Yeah. No. I mean, yeah. Well, I had a friend that had a funeral for her 6-week miscarriage. And then after Roe got overturned, turned around and said, it's a parasite until 20 weeks. Well, then why did you have a funeral for your 6-week miscarriage? You like, cause here's the thing. You get one, you want to tell me, you want to tell me it's one or the other. You want to tell me that if a clump of growing cells is life, then I can't trim my fingernails. Okay, fine. I'll agree to that, but you can't have a funeral for your 6-week miscarriage. If you say that it's a parasite until 20 weeks, like it's the hypocrisy is wild. Wild.
It is wild. It's the cognitive dissonance is kind of outrageous. And it's just very sad because people are being hurt. And I think that I try to think of it like, it's just such a great lie that's been told. And I know that for many years, I went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I think with a lot of women, we're essentially told that we're betraying women overall. We are not real women. Wow. We are betraying women and, you know, fighting so hard. I mean, my grandmother did not own her. My grandmother was a widow and did not even have access to her bank accounts when my grandfather died in 1973. You know, she couldn't buy groceries for her kids. The house was not in her name. She didn't have a driver's license, you know? So I think we've essentially been programmed and, you know, conditioned to believe that those two things are very closely related when they're not related at all. And I think that that's a lot of why people are so upset. I mean, I know I was in church in my conservative LCMS, and we're a very conservative congregation. It's, you know, we're liturgical, you know, setting three every Sunday, you know, and no Methodist hymns. No, just teasing. And there were women crying in my congregation when the pastor mentioned, and he's very good. He mentions things that are going on in the sermons, but his sermons are very long gospel. They're very focused. Where are we supposed to be focused? Abortion is just one of many things that, you know, is wrong with the world. Yeah. And I always appreciate that. So he didn't even say anything incendiary. And there were women crying in my congregation, and they were older women. And I don't know why they were crying. I don't know what the reason was. I don't know, you know, whether they were crying because it was overturned and they were upset that it was overturned, or whether they were crying because they had previously had abortions and, you know, they felt that their lives were improved, or whether they were crying because they were sad that so many children have died. I don't know why. And I think that we've just been conditioned to believe that our freedom as human beings, our equality as human beings, is just predicated on this right over everything else. Because when we are pregnant, we are vulnerable. We have to rely on other people. We have, you know, in a way that men don't have to rely on people, and that they're never going to experience that vulnerability. And I think that we don't like the idea of having to rely on that society. And, you know, we believe that this is what's going to get us free, is not having children. Hmm. You know,
also what an incredibly sexist idea that the only way for women to find equality is to be like men. How? Again, the cognitive dissonance. It's, I don't know. I was a member of the manosphere a decade ago. I wrote a blog about pickup and dating, and it was a thing I was into, and it's, you know, something that I've since repented of fully. But at the time, there was a guy or some girl, some feminist, who said 25% of all women that attend higher education will be sexually assaulted. And her point was, we have a sexual assault problem, and we need to fix it. And obviously, it's hyperbole. Obviously, not one in four women are sexually assaulted at college. That is not at all true. And you know that's not true, because the one guy quote tweeted her, a manosphere guy, he quote tweeted her and said, "What kind and loving father would ever send his daughter off to college?" Right? Yeah. Knowing that she has a 1 in 4 chance of being sexually assaulted, I'm not sending you there. I'm not sending my daughter anywhere if she has even a 1 in 100 chance of being sexually assaulted.
Yeah. Because you're not going, and everybody knows the truth. Everybody knows, you know. No. I concur with that. You know, I think there's a lot of other things to worry about now in colleges, but that's not the one I'm worried about. I'm teasing. I'm not.
But like, that's the, you know, but that's the,
I have children who went to college.
That's the whole point, is like the claim is like, it's ridiculous. If you just take a second to think about it, it's ridiculous. You know, people say like, oh man, Black and Indigenous women are going to be the most hurt by restricted access to abortion. The response is, it shouldn't be, oh, well, we obviously care about Black and Indigenous women. The response should be, so you want Black and Indigenous women to abort their babies? Like, you're pushing for that? What kind of Nazi BS is that?
That goes back to what I said, I try to be really cautious. But that goes back to that whole revenge, our revenge being the laughter of our children concept that, you know, I... Mm-hmm. You know, we're definitely not going to learn to overcome bad situations and things by making that decision to, you know, we're just letting them win, you know. Mm. So we can sit in our cubicles and do the things that corporate America wants us to do for the rest of our lives and, you know, take a vacation to some Instagram-worthy place where we can show a couple of pictures and do some nice hashtags and go home to our dogs and, you know, or cats.
I saw a meme.
Paralyzed.
It was, it's the girl, and it says, the meme says, spending your life serving your husband who loves you and cares for you. And the girl's like, oh, that's so sexist. I'm not a slave, yada, yada. And then the next panel was spending your life serving your corporate boss who hates you. Oh, wow. It's so empowering.
Yeah, that's I believe that the root of that, I could be totally wrong here, but I think that might be from a G.K. Chesterton writing. It was either like C.S. Lewis, G.K. Chesterton, somebody writing about feminism and why. And I think that might be rooted in something that one of them wrote. It was one of those, that time era, really solid writers that had made that observation.
I'll look it up.
I think it might have been G.K. Chesterton.
I'll look it up and put it in the show notes. I'll figure it out. We'll,
Yeah, I think it might have been, and there are memes that are based on it, but it is an interesting, you know, thought process. I've definitely evolved in that, in context of those kind of things over the last few years, even. But I think what you said a few minutes ago is right. It's very it's a reductive thing to think that in order to be fully actualize myself as a woman, I need to, you know, alter my biology to be as close to male as conceivably possible, to become, you know, to destroy my fecundity, my fertility, to not have children, to do, you know, the whole thing, you know, people talk about so negatively about men, but the men that I see, the men that I experienced in my family, you know, there were a lot of very negative experiences, but I see my husband leaving and going to work, and he leaves at 5 o'clock in the morning and he doesn't come home till after five.
Right.
You know, why would I want, I don't want him doing that. Why would I'm going to give up the joy and the pleasure of having children and, you know, creating new life and things so that I can go work for 14 hours a day for somebody else to enrich somebody else at the expense of my future. And it just doesn't make any, it doesn't make any sense.
Matt,
to me,
Matt,
you
Walsh,
know, I don't.
Matt Walsh points out, on that Dr. Phil interview that's so famous now.
I've only seen the clip, that little tiny clip of it.
He very artfully points out in that interview that being a woman is more than liking pink and wearing dresses. And that to say being a woman liking pink and wearing dresses is sexist, reductive, it's patronizing and insulting. And everyone agrees with him. But then when he points to these transgender people and he says, you think the thing that makes you a woman is that you're a boy who likes pink and wears dresses. And so you think you're a woman, but you also think that those things are patronizing and reductive as a description of women. So like,
it doesn't make a lot of sense. No. And it's those things, all the things, when I see those ideas being shared, it's just kind of those. I have sons who are older, who are adults. I have three adult children who are in their almost, two of them are in their 30s, and then one's getting ready to head into her 30s. And then I have younger children. But I look at, and I remember when I see things like that and commentary like that, what it makes me think of is what my boys at very young ages thought women were like. That's what 12-year-old boys think women are like. You know, those were, I remember the times that my sons would get gifts for the girls that they were, you know, had their puppy love for. And the gifts were always very sparkly and pink and fluffy and had animals and things like that. And that's what I see in the way that people, you know, that's what I see when I look at that. It's a very 12-year-old boy idea of what girls like and what girls want and what girls are. Versus I have a 9-year-old right now who is like, this is my older daughter was my stepdaughter, and I didn't have her with me until she was 8 or 9. She had already kind of gone through a lot of the personality stuff that I'm seeing with my 9-year-old, and girls are significantly more difficult and complex. And the boys were so easy. Everything was on the surface, which is also a thing. And also why I think sometimes there is some confusion with men on what women are, because they expect that women are just what you see on the surface, because that's how men are. Mm-hmm. It's all on the surface. Yeah. They let it all out, well, and they let you know.
But it goes girls the other way. It goes the other way too, because women often look at men and they're like, wow, what is he really thinking? You know, a guy says, man,
but they're not.
Yeah, a guy says, man, I'm hungry and I want a sandwich. And a girl is like, what is he really thinking? He's thinking he's hungry and he wants a sandwich. Yeah. Like that's,
he wants a sandwich.
Yeah, like that's.
Yeah. My husband is pretty clear when he's, you know, and that's not to belittle like emotional responses. And, you know, we do have like, you know, there's a lot in the news about, you know, men suffering and, some of the silence that they sit in. That's not to say that that's not happening either, but you know, my husband's always very clear on how he feels about things, what he thinks, if he's upset or happy or anything like that. He's very open and honest about that. And, you know, if there's misinterpretation on that, it's definitely not because he's not clear on what he's thinking, and it's not on the surface, you know.
My wife often knows when I'm in a bad mood before I do. Not even joking. She'll be like, yeah, wow, you need to take a nap. You're cranky. And I'm like, I'm not cranky. And she's like, bro, you've been slamming doors all day. Oh,
all
yeah,
day
I guess I am cranky.
Just, I am. Yeah. Well, that's what we're here for. Somebody will find a way to make that out to be like, not living up to your full potential and being a mom to a man. And I don't know what to do with that. Cause you know what I mean? I don't know.
So in a way I don't, okay, let's get canceled. Let's go for it. The Bible says that you leave your mother and father and cleave to your spouse. Right. And the two become one flesh. There is a way in which you are supposed to be mothering and nurturing to your husband, and he is supposed to be fatherly and protective of you. That's a thing. That's a thing. So, you know, I don't know. I think there's a lot more to unpack here as far as like gender roles in society, but yeah. We are out of time. Maybe I'll have you back on. We can talk about it. How do you feel?
Definitely. Okay. Definitely.
Awesome. Sarah, it was a pleasure. Is there anything I can promote for you?
No, I don't promote. I wrote an article for Live Action. It's on my Twitter. People want to read it. But no, not right now. Maybe someday.
Okay.
There's a hope.
Well, thank you
There's
so
a
much.
Hope. I actually have about 3/4 of the way through something that I've been putting together.
Okay.
It's not ready yet.
Well, thank you for coming on. It means a lot, and I really enjoyed our talk.
I did too, as well. It was nice getting to know you a little better. Definitely nice.
Awesome. Well, you have a wonderful night, ma'am.
You too. Thank you so much.